Chapter 3. I thought this all the better for my purpose, and made bold to tap again. They were talking in a low tone, and money was passing, for I heard it being counted out. Who is it? Asked Brother Hawkyard, sharply. George Silverman, I answered, holding the door open. May I come in? Both brothers seemed so astounded to see me, that I felt shyer than usual. But they looked quite cadaverous in the early gaslight, and perhaps that accidental circumstance exaggerated the expression of their faces. What is the matter? Asked Brother Hawkyard. Eh? What is the matter? Asked Brother Gimlet. Nothing at all, I said, diffidently producing my document. I am only the bearer of a letter from myself. From yourself, George? Cried Brother Hawkyard. And to you, said one. And to me, George? He turned paler, and opened it hurriedly, but looking over it, and seeing generally what it was, became less hurried, recovered his color, and said, Praise the Lord! That's it! Cried Brother Gimlet. Well put! Amen! Brother Hawkyard then said, in a livelier strain, You must know, George, that Brother Gimlet and I are going to make our two businesses one. We are going into partnership. We are settling it now. Brother Gimlet is to take one clear half of the profits. Oh, yes, he shall have it. He shall have it to the last farthing. D5. Said Brother Gimlet, with his right fist firmly clenched on his right leg. There is no objection, pursued Brother Hawkyard, to my reading this aloud, George. As it was what I expressly desired should be done, after yesterday's prayer, I more than readily begged him to read it aloud. He did so, and Brother Gimlet listened with a crabbed smile. It was in a good hour that I came here, he said, wrinkling up his eyes. It was in a good hour, likewise, that I was moved yesterday, to depict for the terror of evildoers a character the direct opposite of Brother Hawkyard's. But it was the Lord that done it. I felt him at it, while I was perspiring. After that it was proposed by both of them, that I should attend the congregation once more before my final departure. What my shy reserve would undergo, from being expressly preached at and prayed at, I knew beforehand. But I reflected, that it would be for the last time, and that it might add to the weight of my letter. It was well known to the brothers and sisters, that there was no place taken for me in their paradise. And if I showed this last token of deference to Brother Hawkyard, notoriously in despite of my own sinful inclinations, it might go some little way in aid of my statement, that he had been good to me, and that I was grateful to him. Merely stipulating, therefore, that no express endeavor should be made for my conversion, which would involve the rolling of several brothers and sisters on the floor, declaring that they felt all their sins in a heap on their left side, weighing so many pounds of ergepoise, as I knew from what I had seen of those repulsive mysteries, I promised. Since the reading of my letter, Brother Gimlet had been at intervals wiping one eye with an end of his spotted blue neckerchief, and grinning to himself. It was, however, a habit that brother had, to grin in an ugly manner even when expounding. I call to mind a delighted snarl with which he used to detail from the platform the torments reserved for the wicked, meaning all human creation except the brotherhood, as being remarkably hideous. I left the two, to settle their articles of partnership, and count money, and I never saw them again, but on the following Sunday. Brother Hawkyard died within 2 or 3 years, leaving all he possessed to Brother Gimlet, in virtue of a will dated, as I have been told, that very day. Now I was so far at rest with myself, when Sunday came, knowing that I had conquered my own mistrust, and righted Brother Hawkyard in the jaundiced vision of a rival, that I went, even to that coarse chapel, in a less sensitive state than usual. How could I foresee that the delicate, perhaps the diseased, corner of my mind, where I winced and shrunk when it was touched, or was even approached, would be handled as the theme of the whole proceedings? On this occasion it was assigned to Brother Hawkyard to pray, and to Brother Gimlet to preach. The prayer was to open the ceremonies. The discourse was to come next. Brothers Hawkyard and Gimlet were both on the platform. Brother Hawkyard on his knees at the table, unmusically ready to pray. Brother Gimlet sitting against the wall, grinningly ready to preach. Let us offer up the sacrifice of prayer, my brothers and sisters and fellow sinners. Yes, but it was I who was the sacrifice. It was our poor, sinful, worldly-minded brother here present who was wrestled for. The now opening career of this our unawakened brother might lead to his becoming a minister of what was called the church. That was what he looked to. The church. Not the chapel, Lord. The church. No rectors, no vicars, no archdeacons, no bishops, no archbishops, in the chapel, but, O Lord, many such in the church. Protect our sinful brother from his love of lucre. Cleanse from our unawakened brother's breast his sin of worldly-mindedness. The prayer said infinitely more in words, but nothing more to any intelligible effect. Then Brother Gimlet came forward, and took, as I knew he would, the text, My kingdom is not of this world. But whose was, my fellow sinners? Whose? Why, our brother's here present was. The only kingdom he had an idea of was of this world. That's it. From several of the congregation. What did the woman do, when she lost the piece of money? Went and looked for it. What should our brother do, when he lost his way?
Go and look for it, from a sister.
Go and look for it, true. But must he look for it in the right direction, or in the wrong?
In the right, from a brother.
There spake the prophets. He must look for it in the right direction, or he couldn't find it. But he had turned his back upon the right direction, and he wouldn't find it. Now, my fellow sinners, to show you the difference betwixt worldly-mindedness and unworldly-mindedness, betwixt kingdoms not of this world and kingdoms of this world, here was a letter wrote by even our worldly-minded brother unto Brother Hawkyard. Judge, from hearing of it read, whether Brother Hawkyard was the faithful steward that the Lord had in his mind only t'other day, when, in this very place, he drew you the picture of the unfaithful one, for it was him that done it, not me. Don't doubt that. Brother Gimlet then groaned, and bellowed his way through my composition, and subsequently through an hour. The service closed with a hymn, in which the brothers unanimously roared, and the sisters unanimously shrieked at me, that I by wiles of worldly gain was mocked, and they on waters of sweet love were rocked. That I with mammon struggled in the dark, while they were floating in the second dark. I went out from all this with an aching heart and a weary spirit. Not because I was quite so weak, as to consider these narrow creatures interpreters of the divine majesty and wisdom, but because I was weak enough, to feel as though it were my hard fortune, to be misrepresented and misunderstood. When I most tried to subdue any risings of mere worldliness within me, and when I most hoped that, by dint of trying earnestly, I had succeeded. Seventh chapter, my timidity and my obscurity occasioned me to live a secluded life at college, and to be little known. No relative ever came to visit me, for I had no relative. No intimate friends broke in upon my studies, for I made no intimate friends. I supported myself on my scholarship, and read much. My college time was otherwise not so very different from my time at Hotten Towers. Knowing myself to be unfit for the noisier stir of social existence, but believing myself qualified to do my duty in a moderate, though earnest way, if I could obtain some small preferment in the church, I applied my mind to the clerical profession. In due sequence I took orders, was ordained, and began to look about me for employment. I must observe that I had taken a good degree, that I had succeeded in winning a good fellowship, and that my means were ample for my retired way of life. By this time I had read with several young men, and the occupation increased my income, while it was highly interesting to me. I once accidentally overheard our greatest Don say, to my boundless joy, that he heard it reported of Silverman, that his gift of quiet explanation, his patience, his amiable temper, and his conscientiousness made him the best of coaches. May my gift of quiet explanation come more seasonably and powerfully to my aid in this present explanation than I think it will. It may be in a certain degree owing to the situation of my college rooms in a corner, where the daylight was sobered, but it is in a much larger degree referable to the state of my own mind, that I seem to myself, on looking back to this time of my life, to have been always in the peaceful shade. I can see others in the sunlight. I can see our boat's crews, and our athletic young men on the glistening water, or speckled with the moving lights of sunlit leaves, but I myself am always in the shadow looking on. Not unsympathetically, God forbid, but looking on alone, much as I looked at Sylvia from the shadows of the ruined house, or looked at the red gleam shining through the farmer's windows, and listened to the fall of dancing feet, when all the ruin was dark, that night in the quadrangle. I now come to the reason of my quoting that laudation of myself above given. Without such reason, to repeat it would have been mere boastfulness. Among those who had read with me was Mr. Fairway, second son of Lady Fairway, widow of Sir Gaston Fairway, Baronet. This young gentleman's abilities were much above the average, but he came of a rich family, and was idle and luxurious. He presented himself to me too late, and afterwards came to me too irregularly, to admit of my being of much service to him. In the end, I considered it my duty to dissuade him from going up for an examination which he could never pass, and he left college without a degree. After his departure, Lady Fairway wrote to me, representing the justice of my returning half my fee, as I had been of so little use to her son. Within my knowledge a similar demand had not been made in any other case, and I most freely admit that the justice of it had not occurred to me until it was pointed out. But I at once perceived it, yielded to it, and returned the money. Mr. Fairway had been gone 2 years or more, and I had forgotten him, when he one day walked into my rooms as I was sitting at my books. Said he, after the usual salutations had passed, Mr. Silverman, my mother is in town here, at the hotel, and wishes me to present you to her. I was not comfortable with strangers, and I dare say I betrayed that I was a little nervous or unwilling. Said he, without my having spoken, I think the interview may tend to the advancement of your prospects. It put me to the blush to think that I should be tempted by a worldly reason, and I rose immediately. Said Mr. Fairway, as we went along, are you a good hand at business? I think not, said one. Said Mr. Fairway then, my mother is. Truly? Said one. Yes. My mother is what is usually called a managing woman. Doesn't make a bad thing, for instance, even out of the spendthrift habits of my eldest brother abroad. In short, a managing woman. This is in confidence. He had never spoken to me in confidence, and I was surprised by his doing so. I said I should respect his confidence, of course, and said no more on the delicate subject. We had but a little way to walk, and I was soon in his mother's company. He presented me, shook hands with me, and left us to, as he said, to business. I saw in my lady fairway a handsome, well-preserved lady of somewhat large stature, with a steady glare in her great round dark eyes that embarrassed me. Said my lady, I have heard from my son, Mr. Silverman, that he would be glad of some preferment in the church. Apostrophe I gave my lady, to understand that was so. I don't know whether you are aware, apostrophe my lady proceeded, that we have a presentation to a living? I say we have, but, in point of fact, I have. Apostrophe I gave my lady to understand, that I had not been aware of this. Said my lady, so it is. Indeed I have two presentations, one to 200 a year, one to 6. Both livings are in our county, North Devonshire, as you probably know. The first is vacant. Would you like it? Apostrophe apostrophe, what with my lady's eyes, and what with the suddenness of this proposed gift, I was much confused. I am sorry it is not the larger presentation, apostrophe said my lady, rather coldly, though I will not, Mr. Silverman, pay you the bad compliment of supposing that you are, because that would be mercenary, and mercenary I am persuaded you are not. Apostrophe, said I, with my utmost earnestness, thank you, Lady Fairway, thank you, thank you. I should be deeply hurt, if I thought I bore the character. Apostrophe, naturally, apostrophe said my lady. Always detestable, but particularly in a clergyman. You have not said, whether you will like the living? Apostrophe, with apologies for my remissness or indistinctness, I assured my lady that I accepted it most readily and gratefully. I added that I hoped she would not estimate my appreciation of the generosity of her choice by my flow of words, for I was not a ready man in that respect when taken by surprise or touched at heart. The affair is concluded, apostrophe said my lady, concluded. You will find the duties very light, Mr. Silverman. Charming house, charming little garden, orchard, and all that. You will be able to take pupils. By the by, no. I will return to the word afterwards. What was I going to mention when it put me out? Apostrophe apostrophe, my lady stared at me as if I knew, and I didn't know, and that perplexed me afresh. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.